everyone, and welcome to another episode of Horror Homeroom Conversations. I'm Elizabeth Irwin.
I'm Gwen Hoffman.
I'm Dawn Keatley. I'm in the room. I don't have my list, but I'm going to enjoy Gwen and Liz's and perhaps comment.
On this episode, we're celebrating Earth Day by counting down our top 10 favorite eco-horror films. Primal, dread-driven, and at times unrelenting, eco-horror is an eclectic bag. Whether it's animals gone bad due to loss of habitat or airborne toxins unleashed thanks to global warming, this subgenre often has one thing in common: humans making boneheaded decisions all in the name of progress. So stay tuned. All right, Gwen, it is all you. I cannot wait to hear this list.
All right, so there is no rhyme or reason to my list. It is not in chronological order. It is not in, it is
She's
not
getting worse, number, I
yes.
Know.
But I do have a hands-down favorite, and I also did include a film that's not really horror-y, but
Boo.
Doesn't matter. Yeah, that's a term. Just coined it. Hashtag horror-y. All right, so I'm going to look at my films, and it is going to kind of read like it's a who's who of animal horror, but it's not, because I really tried to go out of my way to find films where, first of all, animals aren't necessarily depicted as just monsters from nowhere, because I think that even to, if you look at a film like Jaws, you don't really get a rhyme or reason for where Jaws is coming, and I feel like the negative impacts of that film on the actual environment of sharks and the ocean left it off of my list, where it's one of my favorite horror films of all time. It hurts when you think about what it did in reality. So I'm going to start out with Day of the Animals, so 1977, especially because the film starts out talking about the hole in the ozone layer. And I think it is, you know, important. You have Earth Day starting in 1970, and it was the birth of the modern environment movement. So they were thinking about things like toxic dumps, pesticides, freeways, loss of wilderness, extinction of wildlife, polluting factories, oil spills. And that's where Earth Day really came from, was the Wisconsin senator. He was impacted by the oil spill in California, and he kind of said, let's take the momentum of the anti-war movement, and let's see if we can get environmentalism on people's minds.
It's almost like you're a historian.
Yeah. It's almost like I really care about the environment. So
that's a historian.
Yes.
Exactly.
So when Day of the Animals talks about the hole in the ozone layer, and this film depicts what could happen if we do nothing to protect the ozone and life on Earth, I think that that's really important. And the next one I have is Frogs, 1972, because even if you look at the cover of many of the posters or the film itself, it talks about the day that nature struck back. And it doesn't really go terribly into some of what was going on, but it talks about water quality. Mm. And I think that that was something that was extremely important. Too. I mean, that was some of the first legislation that was kind of pushed through, was clean air and clean water. So to talk about pollution and poor water quality and toxins in the water, that was important at the time period. Next, I have Deep Blue Sea.
Ooh, nice.
So I am a huge fan of shark films. Huge fan. I mean, anytime Shark Week comes around, you guys are going to hear from me. I've got posts about sharks on our website. But I like Deep Blue Sea because it talks about vivisection.
Yes.
So when humans tamper with animals for the betterment of ourselves, and we do it willy-nilly, and we do it to the detriment of others, I think that this is a perfect reason for nature to strike back. It's not just a shark with a vendetta. This is, hey, you know what? You're hurting, and we're just going to get our justice for that.
Sharknado has the same plot, I have to say.
You're right. Yeah. But Deep Blue Sea does it better because, again, Deep Blue Sea.
I think that goes without saying.
Hands down, top three of the deaths on my list, top three deaths is from Deep Blue Sea when Samuel Jackson loses his life. That's one of my favorite scenes.
That's another list we have to do sometime.
Yes, I'll have Sinister 2 on there. I'll have Deep Blue Sea. But so, yeah, that's why I have that one on there as one of the shark films.
I have to say, just I was looking this up when you were talking about frogs because I remember reading this. As of last year, they estimate that around 200 frog species have completely disappeared since the 1970s.
Oh, absolutely.
Wow. Yeah.
So there's actually the new documentary on Netflix right now called Our Planet. So anybody that's a fan of those David Attenborough kind of documentaries. Yeah, this is a new one that's out. It just came out this month. And the first episode starts talking about how over 60% of our species have become extinct every single year. And people don't realize this because a lot of times it is insects and amphibians and reptiles. Every single year we're losing species. And it would make sense that the frogs, because they're the kind of canary in the coal mine.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think that's the other reason, too, that I really liked that one. So now I'm going to move on to backcountry.
So, I love backcountry.
I know.
You like that?
I do love backcountry. Oh, first of all, it's got Missy Peregrine in it. So anybody that's ever seen the movie Stick It, yo, good movie. I love Stick It. It kind of brings out my bring it on kind of fan. Like my, oh, I love it. But it also combines my love of nature with my hatred of marriage. So I feel like she kind of gets into these misadventures because her boyfriend is trying to propose to her. And he has absolutely no understanding of the fact that she really doesn't want to be doing that.
Right. Yeah.
She really doesn't want to be there. He lies throughout and says, hey, no, yeah. I didn't see a bear bed. And now she, and again, another and man that takes, can't ask for directions.
Yeah, and he takes away her cell phone.
He does take away her cell phone. Yeah. And he threatens to dump her at some point. Like, I mean, come on. But I also like, too, that the bear, he's not some, it's not like in Grizzly, you know, that he's some freak of nature. It's not like something that came about because of nuclear waste. Like, it was just a bear that was in the woods, and these people were camping.
And it is one of the most terrifying moments I've ever seen. When they're in their tent and they hear something and then they finally unzip the tent and look out and see that bear. I mean, it's just terrifying.
And I like that it didn't, I mean, yes, the bear is the threatening force, but it doesn't make bears in general horrible. You get the sense in this film that they were just in the wrong place at the wrong time. And, you know, when somebody gets their head bit by a puma, I think, oh, shit, I probably don't want to hike there. But again, I'm going into their territory, you know, and I felt a little bit more comfortable with that type of a story rather than it was just some weird bear that has that hates people and hunts them down.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just like a regular, normal bear.
I agree.
Don't they explain why, like, I can't remember if there was something about they were just in its territory.
And he was picking at his toe and his toe was bleeding, too.
Oh, yeah.
That was the other thing that kind of happens. Another reason that, don't settle down. Come on. When your fiance's picking his toes. Come on. In the woods.
He deserved everything that happened to him.
Absolutely. Don't get married, Missy Peregrine. So my next one is Creepshow 2.
Oh.
Because of that section, The Raft. If you go from the comic books or if you go from the film or whatever, you might get a sense that it might be supernatural. But I just, the fact that there's that oily slick. Mm-hmm. That kind of evokes something in my mind about where did that come from? That's not a natural type thing. That's probably from leftover from something that man did. And it's fighting back. So that's why I kind of added that one in there. This one you guys will probably disagree with me on because I'm specific about it, that I like The Mist, but the TV series.
What?
No.
Who likes The Mist TV show
Frances
over the
Conroy.
Movie?
Frances Conroy, number one. She can do no wrong. I don't care what she's in. If she's in 6 Feet Under, if she's in American Horror Story, she can do no wrong. She could tell me that my family members died, and I'm okay with it because it came from Frances Conroy. She's an amazing actress.
I haven't seen The Mist, the TV show, but I know you
so
were
bad.
Not a fan.
No, it's not, because we're going to fight tonight.
We are. Fight.
I just feel like it really privileges this nature versus religion, and just Mother Nature is, especially when they go into trial by ordeal. And she's like, hey, you've got your traditions and conventional wisdom, but guess what? History's on my side because people didn't listen to nature, and here we are. It's happening again. And when she walks out into this trial by ordeal, she comes back, and she's representative of nature.
I got none of that from the TV show, not even a sliver. Although, in fairness, I did not watch the whole thing because it was so poorly acted, including by Frances.
Nope.
Yes.
But you had to get to at least episode 7 and 8 because that's where the trial by ordeal was.
How
was episode 7 because
it
was amazing.
To 7 or 8.
It was amazing.
So brutal.
I can't. I feel like I'm on Judge Judy right now. I'm just going to ignore the negativity because that's okay. So this one you'll probably be okay with, Liz. So I'm going to redeem myself. It's Lake Placid.
Oh, well, yeah.
And whereas there's not really any reason that this giant crocodile is there, I feel like the friendship between Betty White and that crocodile really just shows you how far the bond between human and animals could go.
Now there's a woman who can do no wrong.
Correct.
Okay.
See,
if Betty White was in The Mist, would we be okay with
that?
Yes. Betty would never.
I can't. The next one I have is Godzilla, because I think that when you talk about, he came about because of the hydrogen bomb, and you see the indiscriminate damage that he can cause is much like the radiation that created him. I think that that kind of narrative is important. Plus, I had a reoccurring dream that Godzilla was walking down my childhood street where I grew up. I constantly would have this dream that Godzilla was just walking down the street and I just could never hide. So I think that that's maybe in the back of my head too.
We'll have to unpack that someday.
But I think it just kind of reflects what man-made terrors can do. And I'm so passionate about the ocean and, you know, they were doing underwater hydrogen bomb testing. And I think that even to some of the things that we still do today, like the sonic noises that are going out into the ocean, the damage that that causes, that we have to keep that kind of attention going. My next one is one that is not horror-y. And then I'll end with my favorite film.
Okay.
So my non-horror-y film is Tank Girl.
What?
1995.
Tank Girl.
Tank Girl.
I should have seen it coming.
If you've never seen Tank Girl, you need to.
Never heard of it.
It is an amazing film starring...
Can skip it.
No, starring Lori Petty and these mangaroos. Including one of them is Ice-T, right?
Yes.
So, yeah. But
and it is not it horror.
It is opportune because it's set in 2022. So right
so
now
it's dystopian.
It's 2019. We've only got 3 years left, and this could be happening.
I can only hope.
So I guess the premise is that a comet hits the Earth, and everything kind of dries up, and there's no useful water. And then you have these conglomerate companies that come in and suck up whatever usable the water there is, and they kind of hold it to themselves, and they're like, oh, there's the haves and have-nots. So there's people just, it's almost Mad Max-y trying to get this water.
Yeah, I was thinking Mad Max.
But again, it makes sense to me, too, because people take for granted the luxury of fresh water.
That's true.
And they take for granted how long it's going to be around and how much we can abuse it. And I think that that's also close to my heart. So just that narrative of the loss of usable drinking water is very, very important. So it's listed online as sci-fi. And if you want to say sci-fi, that's kind of part of the genre.
I'm not going to fight you on the sci-fi, but your description of the movie is a movie I would totally watch.
Because
I don't know that that's Tank Girl.
It is such a good movie. I'm calling my brother right now on this podcast. So I'm going to phone a friend and he'll tell you you're wrong.
Phone
and if
a
my
friend,
brother says you're wrong,
I'm
you're
wrong.
Have you seen it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can borrow it. I have it on DVD. You don't even have to watch it on my Fire Stick. My number one film, hands down, is one I've mentioned before, Sharkensaw Women's Prison Massacre.
Yes!
Because it's so unique. So first of all, it talks about fracking. So this is kind of how this prehistoric shark emerges, is because there's fracking going on.
Huh, I wonder if that's the...
And I think that that's important, too, because when your water lights on fire, there's a problem.
Yeah.
And fracking can lead to that. So it brings awareness to that. And then the second thing is the treatment of the shark is different than any other film. So it's really not treated as monstrous, and not one shark dies in this film.
Mm.
Whereas in almost any other film, if it was a bear, if it was a shark, if it was a frog, you gotta kill it. And in this one, you don't. It's not this horrible monster. They just escape it and keep going on. So I really did like that about the film, is the treatment of the shark.
Wow. I don't know that I can follow that list,
and
honestly.
I felt like, of honorable mention, I mean, you have Swamp Shark, which talks about the illegal animal trade, which is huge, especially if people don't know about pangolins. Most trafficked animal ever, and people don't even know what this thing is, which is a problem. Then you have Orca, which evokes images of that documentary Blackwater,
what can
happen when we steal animals from the ocean. You have Rattled, the TV movie that we've talked about before, which talks about construction blasting.
Which one cannot find anywhere.
No, you can't.
I'm so bummed.
And then you also have Alligator, because he's living off of discarded lab rats injected with growth hormones.
Mm-hmm.
So I like those. But I think that they bring up important topics, especially when we're talking about Earth Day.
So I wonder if the,
Sharkensaw Women's Prison Massacre.
Prison Massacre. Mm-hmm.
That's a mouthful. That's a mouthful. It's a great movie.
It's the first. I know, and you've written about it on Horror Homeroom, so that's great. I wonder if that's the first film so far that brings horror to fracking, or like makes a horror film around fracking.
It might be, actually.
I feel like I might have seen another at some point, but it might have been after. Well,
they're making one in Pennsylvania in Erie called Unearthed, which is, I think, a kind of zombie fracking film, but it's not out yet.
Well, okay. For my list, I have to admit, when you guys suggested that we do eco horror, I sort of died a little inside because it is not my preferred genre. But then I realized that I actually do like a lot of these films because I like really bad B movies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think you're going to see that reflected for sure. So if you're someone like myself who really watches non-ironically Mystery Science Theater 1000, I think this list might be for you. And I have to say that it broke my heart because I thought I knew my number one. I thought it was going to be the giant spider invasion.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not an environmental reason that the giant spiders happen. And so it broke my heart. Because the scene of Barbara Hale, who played Della Street on Perry Mason, rolling down the hill at like age 60, it's the best thing ever. Anyway.
Is your number one Slugs?
It is not. But I took some time thinking about these. So number 10 is Birdemic, Shock and Terror. And okay, this one has really found its way on more than a few bad lists. And when I say bad lists, like bad of all time, it really is kind of awful. But it's also entirely within my wheelhouse because it's so awful that you can't help but just sort of watch the spectacle. Basically, what happens is birds begin to mutate and become toxic because of global warming. Ooh. And it was made on a $10,000 budget. It's a complete cheese fest. It really is almost unwatchable unless you like B-movies. So keep that in mind. I find it ridiculously entertaining. Other people might need to be inebriated. So just throwing that out there.
I'm always inebriated, so
you're going to love
no.
it. Number 9 is The Thaw from 2009.
Yeah,
and that's a good film.
Yeah, I sort of have this weird like love-hate relationship with it, though, because on one hand, Val Kilmer, who I do not like at all. Yeah.
Not even in Top Gun?
No, I don't like Top Gun. I think that's highly overrated. Sorry. Did I just break your heart a little?
It did.
But I do really enjoy this film's premise. So basically what happens is that the ice caps are melting and scientists discover a woolly mammoth and they bring the woolly mammoth in. They do some experimentation and suddenly it releases bugs that are carrying these pathogens. And the ending scene is so creepy to me because you can actually see something like this happening.
Yeah.
So this one and the whole idea of contagion really, really stayed with me, and I love it. Number 8 is Kingdom of Spiders, 1977. And I have two words for you, William Shatner. It's basically about an army of tarantulas, and they get, like, really super buff. And they just wreak havoc wherever they go. And it basically comes about as a result of pesticides being thrown about willy-nilly in the community. Number 7 is Chopper Chicks in Zombie Town from 1989. I appreciate that this may be a controversial choice. It has absolutely zero redeeming value. It's completely offensive on multiple levels, but it is a good example of eco horror as it was defined in the 1980s. Mm. And the story revolves around the Cycle Sluts, which are an all-female motorcycle gang. And they come up against this evil scientist turned mortician, and he's turning people into zombies. And he's using a radioactive mine to do it. It's camp. It throws all semblance of good taste right out the window, and I love it. If anyone's going to complain about films on my list, it's going to be this one, but you should check it out.
You never saw my Psycho Slut jacket, did you?
See, I feel like this is your kind of movie. If you haven't already seen it.
You have to have seen that movie.
Yeah, have you seen this one?
No. It's zombies in it.
Yeah,
but these are not zombies like your mama zombies. These are Psycho Slut zombies. So.
Yeah, if they're Psycho Sluts, I'm there.
I mean, the Psycho Sluts, yes. Zombies, no. So yeah, I could see why it could be a tussle
on the bounce.
For you. For
Well, number 6 is one you definitely won't watch. That is Redneck Zombies from 1989.
No, I'm scared of rednecks.
And this is an epitome of a trash movie. And I think it was also called a Z movie. So that kind of gives you an idea about production values and whatnot. It's the story of these Southern men who are bootleggers, and some radioactive waste accidentally gets in the mix, and it turns the people, like the yuppies who come to visit the backwoods, into zombies. So it's excellent. It's horror comedy gold, and I definitely recommend it. Number five is Rogue from 2007.
I love
a good
this
one.
And
yeah.
I think actually that there is a case to be made that this is the best Animals Gone Bad movie that I've ever seen. It is Australian. It's an independent film. And honestly, I found myself rooting for like the giant flesh-eating crocodile more than I did the humans. And I think it goes into what you were saying about how we want to understand like sort of the plight of the animals and that this can be horror and it can be silly, but it can also underscore like real issues that are facing endangered species. Number four is The Bay from 2012.
I was wondering if you'd have that.
Of course. Good. And I think it is interesting that this movie predates the Flint water crisis by 2 years.
Yeah.
So I rewatched it recently and it was really hard not to consider what's happening in Flint outside of this movie. And it's what happens when politicians fail to take into consideration growing questions about water quality.
They don't. What are you doing?
It feels so close to home.
It's about factory farming, too. I mean, that's what causes the problem, right? The pig farms or chicken farms?
It's the pig farms, And it is a found footage film, which I am rarely a fan of. But I think in this case, it really uses sort of those tropes very, very well.
Yeah.
So it's worth a watch. And it's sort of more like a respectable film because it is by Barry Levinson. So if you don't like my trash recommendations, perhaps you will like this one.
And he actually started out to make a movie about the Chesapeake Bay and discovered there already was one. And he was like, why have I never heard of this? Clearly documentaries aren't getting the message across. So I'm going to make a horror film.
Oh,
I mean, that was what he thought. He just thought he'd reach more people if he made a horror film about it.
Number three is Black Sheep from 2006. It's another title for Gwen that falls into the horror comedy camp. But this is an Australian film about a mutated sheep. I mean, there's really no overarching theme. It's gross out
other than
humor.
The sheep wants to kill.
Wasn't the cloning of Dolly around that time period, too?
Yes. Well, this predates it by like a decade, I want to say. Because I feel the cloning, wasn't that in like the 1990s?
I feel like it was in the early 2000s.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, that would give more understanding to why. Because it is genetically engineered sheep.
Oh, really?
Because I remember when I was looking at things about, like, the film Godsend and, like, how man was playing with DNA and stuff like that. I just vaguely remember seeing Dolly right around that time period.
She was cloned in July 1996.
Oh, okay. So you're right. It was a lot earlier than I thought.
Yeah. But so this film, it was
about a decade later. That's not really. But it is gross out humor times 10. So if that is not your bag, this is not for you. But I will tell you that this has some of the best kills I've ever seen in a horror film. And I love it. I would recommend it solely for that, honestly. Number two is the one film that we have overlap with. That's Godzilla from 1954.
Good call.
And you basically summed up why Godzilla should be on everybody's list. And I feel like it really, Godzilla as a creature gets sort of a bum rap because there's a lot of subtext happening in this film that I think people don't give it credit for. And then there's also this great spectacle. So I'm always surprised when people don't like Godzilla. And number one is from 1963, The Birds. Come on. You did not think that I was going to put anything other than Alfred Hitchcock as my number one, did you?
Yeah.
Okay. And I honestly can't sort of believe that I'm putting Alfred Hitchcock on the same list as Chopper Chicks in Zombietown, but here we are.
Well, at least you didn't have Chud. I thought for sure.
You know I was not going to have Chud.
No Toxic Avengers.
Chud.
No.
I do not understand all the love that Chud is getting.
I don't
either. I blame us for a lot of things, but I especially blame it for bringing back Chud.
Agreed.
Because I am not a fan of that. But I am a fan of The Birds, and it's honestly just flat out great.
Yeah.
It feels dread in this absolutely pitch perfect way. The motivation of the birds are never addressed, which I love. I like that they're just a species out there that have turned, and you get the implication that it's because of humans, but you don't know exactly why. And I love the rage, like how much rage these birds have. And I think especially given the cultural context of the time, that it makes sense to read the birds as explicitly eco-horror. So,
because I think it's like the year after, I mean, Rachel Carson's Silent Spring kind of started the whole modern environmental movement.
Right. And that's in 1962.
Yeah.
So that makes sense. Yeah. And also in 1961 was the establishment of the WWF, not the World Wrestling Federation, but the World Wildlife Federation. So I feel like those two things sort of read into what was happening with the birds. So that's my list. Did we leave out any that you thought we should have had?
No, I don't think so.
Any comments
you
on
guys
some of ours?
Great, I've commented on them. you have great lists. I'm just bummed I didn't do it.
So you're going to be going off to see Sharkensaw Women's Prison Massacre?
I might have to watch it now, honestly. I might.
The fracking sold it.
The fracking, yeah.
It is such a good movie. It is.
I love that. Well, let us know, guys, what your thoughts are on Eco Horror, if there's anything you think we should have included on our list. And follow us on all things social media @Horror Homeroom. And in the meantime, we will talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.